The story you are about to hear is true.
Attention! All true...
She's alive! Alive!
Welcome to the Retroist.
As a kid, I didn't care what clothes I wore. Sure, I had a favorite t-shirt and a favorite sweatshirt, but I didn't really care in what order I wore them. I didn't care if they were ironed or neat, if they were clean, sometimes maybe even not so clean. I would put them on and go about my day. My mother and sisters didn't really appreciate that. They had an idea of how maybe I should dress and would, year after year, try buying me clothes that they hoped that I would enjoy enough to keep wearing. I would get them, put them on. If they weren't comfortable or if they made me stand out in any way, I would usually throw them in the back of the closet and only wear them when I was forced to wear them. Say I would come downstairs when we were supposed to be going somewhere and my mother would say, "Why aren't you wearing that sweater I got you?" I would go upstairs, put on the sweater, and come back down. I was having a hard time developing my own sense of style, I guess. To me, a pair of jeans, a t-shirt, some sneakers, that was enough. But I did see fashions that I thought looked cool or interesting. They just seemed out of place and out of time, maybe. For example, when I first saw Indiana Jones on the big screen, and he wears that fedora, the whole outfit, I thought, that is a cool outfit. And part of me, throughout my childhood, thought, that is exactly how I want to dress as a person. For a brief time, I would try to pull off that look when I was in high school. I can't say that it was a success, but it wasn't a failure. And oddly enough, the look started with a new bag for my books. My family had gone to a flea market in northern New Jersey, just this random one we had never been to. We pulled over, we're looking through things, and it was there that I saw this, what would be sort of like a messenger bag nowadays, a bag with a long strap that sort of hung at your side, but it was made of very sturdy material, leather and canvas, and it looked really old. I was able to pick it up for about a dollar. My sisters made fun of me because it was really dirty, needed to be cleaned out, but I took it home, cleaned it out, cleaned the outside of it. My grandmother had some sort of leather treatment stuff that I was able to put on it. It looked great. That Monday, I went to school, and as soon as I went in the door, someone said, "Hey, cool bag." That was it. This was my bag. I was going to use this bag until I died. Unfortunately, it was an old bag, and so almost every weekend, I spent trying to sew this thing back together and keep it going. Books are heavy, and if you're putting multiple in there, shoving some pens in there and other junk, it wears on the bag, but I was determined. And I thought, well, if I could get clothes that sort of match this look, maybe that would be really exciting. And so I started to try to assemble clothes that matched the bag. I started wearing leather shoes to school. I got a pair of pants that weren't jeans. I got this really great canvas and leather jacket sort of thing, and I started wearing it, and I think it looked pretty good. I even got some compliments on it. Unfortunately, I was still growing at this point. I had thought that once I had bought this stuff that I could just wear it forever, and unfortunately I learned I was going to need to replace these things almost every year that I was in school, and that was not sustainable. And so, slowly but surely, I outgrew this new outfit and started to return to my old habits. But deep down inside, I was always thinking about it. And when I think back to my time in school and my sense of personal style, this was the year I felt the most satisfied with. Not too long after this, the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles premiered on television. And almost on a weekly basis for a short amount of time, I was seeing a younger Indiana Jones and all the cool outfits he would wear. And I would think someday. But unfortunately, that someday would never come. On today's show, I'd like to talk to you about the TV show that would come at the tail end of the original Indiana Jones trilogy, The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. We'll talk about the show's creation, the people in front of and behind the camera, its reception, music, and we'll throw in a few surprises here and there. We have an info-packed episode ahead of us, so without further ado, let's start the show. The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles was a television series that ran on ABC Television from March 4th, 1992 to July 24th, 1993. It is based on the movie character, Indiana Jones, and it is based on the early parts of his life. The show was designed to be educational, with young people in mind, and it would hopefully teach them history along the way, starting in the early 1900s and moving forward in time, all of that running along Indiana Jones's life. We even would get to meet an older Indiana Jones at age 93. He's the framing vehicle for the show. He lives in New York City, and encountering people gets him talking, and he tells the story of his life, usually split between two eras, a young boy Indiana Jones and a young adult Indiana Jones. The young boy Indiana Jones, played by Corey Carrier, and the young adult Indiana Jones, played by Sean Patrick Flannery, although there would be an occasion when Harrison Ford would return as middle-aged Indiana Jones. Along the way, we learn that Indy has been everywhere doing everything. He's sort of the Forrest Gump of his time, meeting famous people, being around big events in history. The show came out at a time before what we would see in things like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, so they have to come up with a story about Indiana Jones that is based purely on the three movies that had come before it. So a lot of the things that are mentioned in the TV series would be changed or revised, so perhaps are not canonical based on what you see in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. That's assuming that the movies are the canonical source. I remember the show coming on, being really excited for it, not just because I love Indiana Jones, but because I do like shows that jump around historical events, and it does remind me a lot of a show that I really liked in the early 80s called Voyagers, which was about time travel, and I've covered that on another episode. There's no time travel in the Indiana Jones Chronicles, but the energy is very similar. When Voyagers came out, there were some comparisons to Indiana Jones in articles at the time. The show was created by George Lucas, who is the creator of Indiana Jones. Born in 1944, he's a philanthropist and maker of amazing movies, most notably Star Wars, although he did direct American Graffiti and THX 1138. He would go on to found THX, Industrial Light and Magic, LucasArts, and Lucasfilm, eventually selling Lucasfilm to Disney. He's a passionate, legendary filmmaker, and he does love to tell a story, and he loves to get into the mythology of the story he's telling, and that is where the Indiana Jones Chronicles would come from. That's because during the production of the Indiana Jones movies, people would often come up and ask George Lucas about Indiana Jones. What was he like growing up? What did he do before the movies? What did he do after the movies? When they were doing Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, they do a flashback at the beginning to young Indiana Jones. This was very well received, and Lucas opened up to the idea of doing a whole set of adventures based on a younger Indiana Jones. Would it be a movie? Would it be a television show? He didn't know yet, but Lucas started writing a timeline detailing Indiana Jones's life and assembled those into 70 different adventures starting in 1905 and leading up to the feature films, with each outline talking about a historical person that he would encounter, where he encountered him, and what they were doing. When the series came along, he would take those and give them to different writers so that they could work on what that story would be. When the series eventually ended, only 31 of those 70 stories would be filmed, and many others had already been fleshed out and ready to go. So there's a bunch of other indie adventures just sitting on a shelf, waiting to get made. Not only would Indy in these adventures meet historical figures, but also the characters that are talked about or even met in the movies, like Abner Ravenwood and Renee Belloc. There is a tie-in to Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Maybe it wouldn't have been made if it wasn't for the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, because during the production, Lucas started to get interested in the story of Crystal Skulls, and there would have been an episode in the third season involving Indiana Jones looking for a Crystal Skull with his then friend Belloc. That show was never produced, but Lucas never forgot it, and eventually that would turn into Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Are you a fan of the Retros Podcast? Do you like more retro stuff? Why not check out the Retros Patreon? Go to patreon.com/retroist. Supporters of the show get bonus episodes, bonus tracks, bonus scans, access to the Retroist Discord, and more. Feel good about yourself and make a difference in the world. Support the Retroist. If you're going to make an Indiana Jones TV show, why not have the Indiana Joneses we saw on the big screen play Indiana Jones again? And so River Phoenix, who had played Indiana Jones in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and Harrison Ford, who had played him in all three movies, were asked to reprise their roles for the TV series, but they both turned it down, not wanting to get involved in television. Television is a much more acceptable medium nowadays for people to work in, even while they're working in movies. But back then, if you made it into movies, you didn't want to take a step back to work in television. And so open casting started happening, and Corey Carrier was cast as the 10-year-old Indy, and Sean Patrick Flannery was cast as a young Indiana Jones. For old 90-year-old Indiana Jones, they cast theater actor George Hall. He would come in to do these bookend segments on a lot of episodes. There are connections to the film's actors, like Paul Freeman, who played Belloc, would appear in an episode of the show, as would Rushon Seth from Temple of Doom, not playing the roles that they would play in the movies, but instead playing different characters. Some Star Wars people would even show up, including Anthony Daniels, who played C-3PO. He was in the episode Attack of the Hawkmen, where he played a French scientist named Francois. Now, I was reading this and was very surprised. They tried to get Clint Eastwood to play a character in Indiana Jones. He would have been Indiana Jones's older brother, which would have been really fun to see. But he turned down the role, despite what some said was a $10 million offer to do so. Again, people really didn't want to appear on TV once they had made it into the movies. Now, just a little bit about the cast. You have the four Indiana Joneses, who we'll talk about. You also had Henry Jones Sr., Indy's father, played by Lloyd Owen. You had Anna Jones, Indy's mom, played by Ruth DeSosa. Indy's tutor, Miss Helen Seymour, was played by Margaret Tysack. And Ronnie Cotter played Remy Boudoir, Indy's sidekick, in a bunch of episodes. Corey Carrier was born in 1980. He is a former child actor. He's best known for playing Henry Jones Jr. or Indiana Jones in the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. But he was also in Men Don't Leave, The Witches of Eastwick, Crazy People, My Blue Heaven, Nixon, amongst others. Sean Patrick Flannery played a less young Indiana Jones, born in 1965. For a long time, I think he would have been best known for playing young Indiana Jones in this series. Nowadays, he might be known for playing Connor McManus in the Boondock Saints and its sequel. He was also in the TV series version of The Dead Zone. George Hall played old Indiana Jones. Born in 1916, he passed away in 2002. He was a theater actor. He was on Broadway for over 50 years, making his debut in 1946 and working in New York theater for the next five decades. But for the average person who doesn't go to the theater, they're going to know him for the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, although he was also on The Edge of Night and the TV series Remember When, not the Dick Cavett Remember When from HBO, but the AMC series Remember When, WENN. Harrison Ford, who played Indiana Jones in the film, would come back in one episode to play Indiana Jones. I remember being really excited for this episode, and it was very underwhelming. Born in 1942, Ford is, at this point, almost iconic for playing two roles, Han Solo in Star Wars, and of course Indiana Jones, although he has appeared in many other films and won many awards. Playing Henry Jones Sr. was Lloyd Owen. Henry Jones was played famously in The Last Crusade by Sean Connery. Owen was born in 1966. He's a British actor. American audiences are probably going to remember him best for the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, although he was also in Apollo 18 in 2011 and played Elendil in the Amazon Prime Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. Ruth DeSosa played Anna Mary Jones, Indy's mom. DeSosa has had a decent career. If you were watching movies in the late 80s and into the 90s, you're probably going to remember her for Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and Hook. This is where we learn the most about Indy's mom, who passed away when Indy was sort of young. We also learn that the relationship between them was very good. Indy calls her the sweetest, smartest, most wonderful woman who ever lived. In the show, we learn that she died of scarlet fever, although there are other sources later that say that she died of influenza. Whatever the case, she passed away in 1912 at the age of 33. Mary Tysack played Miss Helen Seymour, Indy's tutor, during his father's worldwide tour that went from 1908 to 1910, where a lot of adventure would happen, to the child Indiana Jones. Tysack was born in 1931, passed away in 2011. She was in I, Claudius, 2001 A Space Odyssey, and A Clockwork Orange, and those are just a few things in a fairly large resume. Ronnie Coderay played Remy Boudoir, Indy's sidekick for a lot of adventures. Ronnie was born in 1951, passed away in 2000. He was a Belgian actor, director, presenter, worked in movies, television, radio, just everything. For people in the U.S., they're going to know him for the sort of comic relief character of Boudoir in the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. There are other recurring characters, of course. There are also a lot of famous guest stars and actors who were either established or up and coming at the time. Some historical figures that Indy would meet include T.E. Lawrence, Teddy Roosevelt, Mustafa Ataturk, Norman Rockwell, Charles de Gaulle, George Patton, Al Capone, Pablo Picasso, Puccini, Franz Ferdinand, Edith Wharton, Ernest Hemingway, Winston Churchill, so many more. Playing a lot of those roles are people like Christopher Lee, Daniel Craig, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Vanessa Redgrave, Clark Gregg, Elizabeth Hurley, Anne Heche, Paul Freeman, Max von Sydow, John Pertwee, Sean Pertwee, Terry Jones, and Keith David. If you got a show like this with a big budget, you're going to get some pretty good actors, and this show had plenty of them.
Monday, young Indy goes on a secret mission behind enemy lines. It's the season premiere of the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. Then,
come on, let's boogie!
It's a classic confrontation when Lawrence Taylor and the New York Giants meet Mike Ditka's Chicago Bears on ABC's NFL Monday Night Football.
There were some notable people who came in to write for the show, although Lucas is given story by credit in a lot of episodes. People like Carrie Fisher, Frank Darabont, and Terry Jones would write episodes. There's just a lot of talent behind the scenes writing these things. The show had a big budget and was shot on location around the world. That meant they needed to cut costs somewhere, and instead of filming in 35mm film, the series was shot in 16mm, which gives it a very specific look. And the show was designed so that each pair of episodes could be either broadcast separately as episodes or made into a 2-hour film-length episode. Each episode cost about $1.5 million to make, which is pretty minor now when you think of all the budget that they have for a lot of shows. And each episode took about 3 weeks to make. Because there were two main stars, at first they would alternate between Corey and Sean episodes. Although as the show went on, it seems they would favor the Sean episodes a lot more. There were three stages of production. There was 16 episodes made from 1991 to 1992. Five of them featured young Indy, 10 with older Indy, and one with both. The second went from 92 to 93. That had 12 episodes, just one with younger Indy and 11 with older Indy. The third and final production was from 94 to 95, and that was four made-for-television movies. In 96, they came back and did some additional filming so that they could re-edit the series into 22 feature films. While the film was shot in 16mm, they did do some nice audio doing the entire series in Dolby Stereo. And the show sounds great, and a lot of that has to do with music. The series' main theme was done by Lawrence Rosenthal, who also wrote a lot of the music for the series. They would also bring in Joel McNeely to write a few episodes, and he would receive an Emmy in 1993 for the episode Scandal of 1920. Lawrence Rosenthal was born in 1926. He's a composer, arranger, works in television, film, and theater. Born in Detroit, he moved to Paris to study. Probably some of his best-known works were for The Miracle Worker, A Raisin in the Sun, The Isle of Dr. Moreau, and Clash of the Titans. Joel McNeely is an American conductor, arranger, composer. He is an award-winning protege of the composer Jerry Goldsmith, who now does a lot of work with Disney and Seth MacFarlane, who does American Dad, Family Guy, all those shows. Born in Wisconsin to a musical family, he not only worked with Lucas on the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, he also worked with LucasArts on the video game Shadows of the Empire. He's also pretty famous for conducting re-recordings of film scores by people like Bernard Herrmann, John Barry, and others. I've been listening to a bunch of his music because he provides music for the TV show The Orville, which has a great score and soundtrack. If you haven't listened to it, you might want to check it out, even if you haven't watched the series. The pilot of the show aired on ABC in March of 1992. It was feature-length, called Young Indiana Jones and the Curse of the Jackal. It would later be edited into two episodes, Egypt, May 1908, and Mexico, March 1916. There would be 11 other episodes of an hour each aired in 1992. 7 would appear at the end of the first season, and then 4 would premiere as part of the second season. Unfortunately, the show wasn't doing very well, and only 16 of the remaining 20 episodes were aired in 93. The Family Channel would step in and produce 4 two-hour TV movies that would get broadcast from 1994 to 1996. Lucas had thought that he would take Indiana Jones up to the age of 24, but never made it. He only got up to age 21. While the show was canceled, it would eventually get releases on home video, but it would also show up on TV before that. In 1996, some of the episodes that weren't aired were combined and put on the USA Network. Eventually, the series would be edited into the 22 feature-length films, which would start getting released on VHS at the end of the 90s. As more cable channels started to appear, like Fox Family Channel, they would start to get broadcast there as well. Because it was cut short, there are a lot of episodes that never made it. They intended to shoot them, but they never made it into production. Indy would have met people like Paul Robeson, traveled to Russia, to the Middle East, Scandinavia, Japan, lots of interesting and fun locations that we never got to see. Now, I have printed out my local paper for the time. Put that out where we can see what exactly was out the night that Indiana Jones premiered, but also what people were thinking about it. My local paper at the time, where TV critic Virginia Mann reviewed the show, really touches on what she really didn't kind of like about the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. She points out the fact that the show doesn't use the familiar music from the movie in the series, and that George Lucas appears to be trying to distance the TV show from the movie, which is right. And while I disagree a lot with people who are negative about this show, I do think there is an element of being let down by the series, because you are expecting Harrison Ford. You're expecting that sort of level of Indiana Jones, and what you're getting is something a little bit more educational. It is a show that is meant for a younger audience, or at least is more satisfying for a younger audience who likes history, which I did. Virginia Mann sums it up at the end perfectly, saying, "The famous figure I most wish he'd bump into, though, is the real Indiana Jones." That is a valid criticism, because that episode where Harrison Ford appears, he's not in it for very long. I was so ready to watch it. I was excited. I canceled everything I could to make sure I was home to watch it. And then he's just kind of there to bookend the episode, not a big presence in it. It is very hard to distance the movie from the TV show. So what else was on that night? What might you have wanted to watch if you didn't want to watch the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles? Well, first of all, it does appear in tonight's Best Bets section, saying these are the things you're probably going to watch. And it premiered at 8 p.m., and it says, "Young Indiana Jones and the Curse of the Jackal. As a boy, he meets danger with Lawrence of Arabia, as a teen with Pancho Villa. This is a pilot for the Young Indiana Jones Chronicle TV series." And that was on ABC, starting at 8 and running till 10. After that is Homefront. On CBS that night is Davis Rules, followed by Brooklyn Bridge, then Murphy Brown, and Designing Women. On NBC, from 8 to 9, you have Unsolved Mysteries, followed by Seinfeld, Night Court, and then Quantum Leap, which is a pretty good night of television. I might have switched to Quantum Leap after the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles was over, and I would have been sad about missing Night Court. One of our local TV stations, Channel 5, WNYW, is playing a Columbo, Dagger of the Mind. It's the one where he travels to England against the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. And then on Channel 11, another movie I really like, Running Scared, was playing with Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal. So there are some competition, and if Young Indiana Jones Chronicles wasn't on that night, I would have been debating what I was going to watch otherwise. And that doesn't even take into account what was on cable TV that night, because on HBO, you have Die Hard 2 up against the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. TMC is showing Rocky and Dances with Wolves, so a pretty great night of television. I've been very interested lately in looking what's at the movies at the time these shows come out, and in my town, they're showing Radio Flyer, Father of the Bride, Shining Through, Mississippi Masala, Fried Green Tomatoes, Beauty and the Beast, Hear My Song, The Great Mouse Detective, JFK, and Medicine Man. That's at the 8-plex. Then at the 6-plex, Wayne's World, Hand That Rocks the Cradle, Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, Gate 2, Final Analysis. Even though this is 14 theaters, that does seem like a lot of movies. Oh, here's an ad. The circus is coming to town. Take off to see the clowns at the Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus. And Fryhoffers, who makes bread, will give you a discount code. And here's another one. The Amazing Mongolians are here. You can get discounts from Fryhoffers for $3. ShopRite, though, will give you a discount of $5. And Burger King will give you a discount of $3.50. Oh, and Carvel will give you a $2 discount. So if you aren't getting a discount from someone, you're paying too much to go to the circus. Oh, here's a great ad for ShopRite. Giant money savings. And they have a kind of Hercules-looking guy with a ShopRite belt around his waist, wielding some chains that he broke. I have no idea what this is in connection to, besides the giant savings. Is he supposed to be a giant? But he definitely looks like Hercules is in old movies. Kind of the Steve Reeves. He's got a beard. Wow, that's great. I love the ShopRite belt. Oh, Wednesdays is prime rib night at Charlie Brown's. You get a free shrimp cocktail and a queen cut for $9.95. Coconuts Comedy Club has two headliners, Chip Cooney and Keith Thomas, followed by DJ Music, just $10. Oh, and at Food Town, they're having Price Busters for all your Lenten needs. Feel like we used to see a lot more advertising around Lent. Lenten needs. Some good deals. 59 cents a pound for fresh turkey. Coca-Cola Classic, 2-liter, 89 cents with coupon. I did find some other articles from other papers about the show, discussions of open casting, speculation on who would play the new young Indiana Jones. People seem to have no clue, and so they wildly speculate. I also found an article that compares Voyagers back in 1982 to Indiana Jones, which I think is funny. They even used the term young Indiana Jones prototype way before any young Indiana Jones was ever conceived. In 1991, before the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles premiered, they did talk about it. This is from the Associated Press, mentioning that George Lucas wants to make 3 more Star Wars films, saying that everything at this stage is speculative, but that it would be a prequel. They said George has an idea what he wants to do, but we're not even in pre-production because he is busy working on something called the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. And I'll include all of this in the bonus clippings that I put out. So say you missed the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles when it came out, you'd be happy to know that you could pretty quickly get the show on home video. In Japan, it got a nice release on Laserdisc, but there were some VHS tapes that would come out, although they didn't seem to treat it as seriously as they should. And it took a long time from the Japanese release, which was back in 93 and 94. It took 5 years for them to release it on VHS in the United States. And that happened in October of 99, where they would release half the series on VHS. Each tape would be $14.99. They also released a box set of the feature films. The series had chapter labels on it. When you bought the movie trilogy at the time as a box set, they would include an episode of the series, The Treasure of the Peacock's Eye. And they included that one because the plot of it would continue in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. So it's a prequel. So you kind of got 4 movies you could watch in order, starting with Treasure of the Peacock's Eye, going to Temple of Doom, then Raiders of the Lost Ark, and finally The Last Crusade. They were working on the DVD release of this for a while, wanted to make sure it looked good. There would be historical documentaries made by Lucasfilm for the DVD release of the series. They would make 94 of them over a 5-year period to tie in with the series to make it more educational. The broadcast rights for those documentaries would go to the History Channel, and they would begin airing them on Saturday mornings on the History Channel, and then on Sunday mornings on History Channel International. Lucas hoped that they could use the episodes along with the documentaries in schools to help educate kids about history while making it exciting and fun for them. Now, because Lucas likes to tinker, that meant that the original Indiana Jones Chronicles were not the same as the ones that we got to see when they were on television. And so a group began to despecialize the Indiana Jones Chronicles to try to get it back to the original versions that we saw on television. By June of 2021, the project was completed with 2 seasons and 4 films being restored as closely as possible to the original broadcast. The work continues even today. People who like the show and are inspired to try to even bring it closer to the original version. I really admire that level of commitment to the show.
Before the world discovered Indiana Jones, a young Indiana Jones discovered the world. For him, just growing up,
this is Miss Prentice,
was the greatest adventure of all.
Henry was a remarkable boy and shows every sign of growing up to be a remarkable man.
Do you love me?
Question is, do you love me?
The press calls it spectacular, dazzling, one of the best TV shows that ever happened. Tomorrow, George Lucas presents the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles.
There were some toys and books, all pretty minor, released in relation to the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. There was also an action video game for the Nintendo Entertainment System that was released in January 1993. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a future episode that is more generally about the video games related to Indiana Jones, but I will say this, it was not very well received. In 1990, there was an announcement that there was going to be a new theme park attraction at Disneyland related to Young Indiana Jones, an adventure spectacular. They even printed up some material about it and talked about it in newspapers, and it looks like in press conferences. It would have run 30 minutes and would have an older Indiana Jones talking about his youth, just like in the TV show. Unfortunately, the piece was not developed beyond the concept, but I'm sure the excitement around it helped get people ready for the series that would premiere a couple of years later. The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles was a minor footnote in Indiana Jones mythology and history, but for people who were hungry for more of it, it filled a niche. We had just ended Last Crusade, and it was hard to process that we might never get more Young Indiana Jones unless they rebooted it, which, while not unheard of, was not as common as we get today. And so I was very excited for it, and even though critics might have found fault with the show, I didn't, and couldn't wait for more of it, and was very sad when it ended. What's really great is that people have kept the memory of the show alive, and Lucas believed enough in the show and the concept to put even more production work into it, which gave us even more indie. And I have to say, in this world, you really can't have enough indie. Thank you for listening to the show. For more retro fun, you should drop by the website at retroist.com. If you want to follow me on social media, I'm at most of the major social media networks at Retroist. The music you hear on the show is by Peachy. If you like what you hear, you should follow Peachy on Twitter and Twitch. He's at PeachyPixel8. That's the word Peachy, the word pixel, and the number 8. If you'd like to support The Retroist, you could do so by giving it a 5-star review wherever you downloaded the show. It really is those 5-star reviews that help people find the show nowadays. So if you could do so, I really would appreciate it. If you'd like to support The Retroist further, The Retroist is on Patreon. You can find me at patreon.com/retroist. Supporters of the show get bonus episodes, bonus tracks, bonus scans, and access to The Retroist Discord, the greatest retro community on the internet. This has been another part in my multi-part series on Indiana Jones, and I hope you're continuing to enjoy it. Thanks for listening to the show, and I hope you have a great weekend. Adventure has a new name, and he's 10 years old?
This has been a Retroist production. Goodbye.